Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio.
Every Thursday, join us for
a
personal tour of
vaccination
and
your
rights in the U.S.,
and the host will be notified
a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brock, and attorney at law,
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. If you desire to speak to the host, please press 1 at any time, and the host will be notified that there is a caller in queue. Otherwise, please hold and you will be able to listen to the show.
Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. For we must be the masters of our destiny.
Welcome. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, coming to you live from the Vaccine Rights Studios in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. Got lots of critical, timely information for you today about vaccines, vaccine rights, and vaccine news. And joining me in just a little bit, my good friend and manager with the Pandemic Response Project, Rich Roberts, to talk with us some about what's going on in the nation and around the world in vaccine news. But I wanted to alert folks to something that's going on in Colorado right now. The state legislature is considering a bill that would be taking similar steps to what has already happened in California, Oregon, and Washington over the last 3 years, where in each of those states they have implemented new procedures for parents exercising exemptions for their kids' school, if you want to avoid vaccines required for school and daycare. And each of those states has thrown in extra hurdles to getting the exemption, involving some combination of things, but usually one form or another of a vaccine, a quote-unquote education, which really is about talking people out of getting an exemption in the first place, or making it hard enough for them to get the exemption that they choose not to even go through the procedure in the first place. It's aimed at increasing immunization rates and decreasing exemption rates. In other words, these steps are really contrary to the notion of parents being allowed to independently make an informed choice to decide for themselves with the information or healthcare professional of their choice what they want to do with the vaccine issue. And those of us with some awareness for the issue overwhelmingly favor the right to make an informed choice and to have access freely and easy without coercion one way or the other to complete information, both of which are increasingly hard to come by, the right to choose and the free, objective information on any and all sides of the issue. So I'm very concerned about that. Now, Colorado, the language of the bill, the last language that I saw, made a distinction that the other three states before them did not make, and that in my humble but adamant opinion has left the other three states, California, Oregon, and Washington state, with laws that as drafted and as are on the books today are unconstitutional. Now, technically a law is not unconstitutional unless a court says so. So otherwise, any and every law on the books would be unconstitutional as soon as anybody said it's unconstitutional. So strictly speaking, I'm offering a legal opinion and not asserting a fact, but it is a compelling legal opinion if I do say so myself. And I've had backup on this from other attorneys as well. In one case, a law school professor, specifically with respect to the Washington law. And it boils down to this. Each of those West Coast states' laws has language that refers to non-medical exemptions cumulatively or collectively. There have been people, for example, Oregon, when they just recently changed their law, they removed the word religion or religious and just referred to probably personal beliefs or something like that. And some people have said they lost the religious exemption there, and that's just not true. The word religion was taken out of the law, but you can still object on religious grounds. You can also object on non-religious or philosophical grounds in Oregon. So that's not a restriction of the law. That's an expansion of the law. It now embraces a larger number of potential qualifiers, or a larger number of people now potentially qualify than qualified before. So in that respect, it's an expansion of the law, but it has restricted access to the exemption to a set of procedures that involve getting a vaccine education. So Colorado wants to do the same thing, and their bill is still pending. And the difference between Colorado's currently worded bill and the laws in the other states is the laws in the other states at the statutory level do not make any distinction between religious and non-religious objections. And the reason I say these other three laws are unconstitutional is because the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, what's called the Free Exercise Clause, referring to the free exercise of religion, federal courts have interpreted that right to the free exercise of religion as not requiring anything more than a sincerely held religious belief. So there's two requirements. The beliefs have to be religious in nature or religious. Now, how the law defines that phrase is a whole other question and not a short answer question, but as a starting place, the beliefs have to be religious in nature. And I'll just say that's much broader than what most of us think of when we hear the word religious, because the question is how does the law define religion for legal purposes, not what do you or I think is religious personally. So two requirements, religious in nature and sincerely held. You can't be faking it and qualify for religious exemptions. These are sort of common sense things. You can't have a non-religious belief and have a religious exemption. But the point is this. You only have two requirements to have that federal First Amendment constitutional protection. The belief is religious and the belief is sincere. A state legislature cannot enact a state law, cannot lawfully enact a state law, requiring more than what the Constitution requires to have an exemption for religious on religious grounds, because state law is a lower legal authority than federal law. Federal law supersedes or trumps state law. So when a state puts in a requirement that violates Constitution, that's an unlawful requirement. Now, because if this technicality that laws are not officially unconstitutional until a court says so, what that means as a practical matter is that state legislatures can pass any law they want to, whether it's constitutional or not, as long as they get the votes for it. And state legislatures around the country are using that practical reality because, you see, legislators all over the country take an oath to uphold their state constitution and the federal constitution. So when they pass a law, especially if they've been made aware of it, that steps over constitutional boundaries in a clear and obvious way, which all the West Coast state vaccine exemption laws now do, they are being disingenuous, and they were informed about that. We've been legislative activists have been making efforts, and I've been sticking my hand in these bills when they come up to the extent that I'm able to, and I've just put together a four- or five-page document that an activist took to committee members in Colorado that we hope they'll look at and pay attention to. But the Colorado bill does go a step further. They try to separate out the religious exemption, but the language they have in there didn't even make sense grammatically, something about being an adherent to a religious belief that teaches something, and just didn't even make sense grammatically. You're an adherent to a religion or set of beliefs or something like that, but I don't think you can be an adherent to a belief. That's really rather awkward language to me, as is some of the rest of the language. But at least they took the step of separating out that people with religious objections, it looked like they were trying to say anyway, that they wouldn't have to go through these extra hoops. And that would be constitutionally correct. Now, whether they get the language for the religious part of this bill constitutionally correct, that's a separate matter. What should anybody have to undergo an education? Of course not. The purpose of that is going to be to talk people out of getting an exemption, to say, look how horrible these diseases are, look how you're putting yourself and everyone else at risk. So we'll see how it plays out there. But if you're in Colorado or know anyone in Colorado, make sure they're on board with this. And go to the National Vaccine Information Center's advocacy portal, nvicadvocacy.org, and you can track vaccine legislation in your state, Colorado or otherwise, and you can plug it for free, plug in your information, which is kept private, but then they will use that to tell you who your representatives are and give you the names and phone numbers and emails and addresses and so forth. So they make it as easy as possible to connect with, to identify and communicate with your representative so that you can lend your support or opposition, as the case may be, for the vaccine bills in your state. Well, I'm going to go ahead and bring in Rich Roberts with us and get to some vaccine news. Rich, how are you doing this evening?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks, Alan. Thanks for having me on. How are you doing?
Oh, I am rushed. Time slipped past me this afternoon, and I jumped in here just at the last second, but we're up and running and good to go and otherwise doing just fine. Have you had an opportunity, Rich, to take a look at some of what's going on around on the planet today in the vaccine news arena?
Well, I have, Alan, and before I launch into that, I just want to say that that was interesting what you were saying about that legislation in Colorado, and that is a disturbing trend that we see states, you know, passing these requirements, which seem like, you know, thinly veiled kind of pressure mechanisms just to kind of make exemptions even that much more difficult and unattractive for people to pursue. So I don't know. I don't know what to say about that exactly. Those are, you know, all the states on the West Coast. So I think of those as blue states. So, you know, I don't know. It just seems like there's a very powerful kind of, you know, pro-vaccine legislative movement too, and it is active. I did go into the news, Alan, and right off, you know, on our news page at the very top, I noticed the Nurses Against Mandatory Vaccinations petition. And so I went and checked that out, and I wanted to talk about that and also, you know, let you know that I signed the petition. And you probably have too, but that's another disturbing trend right there, Alan. You know, nurses and other medical professionals being basically forced to take vaccinations or, you know, face losing their jobs. And so, you know, I haven't had a chance to dig too much into all the nuts and bolts of this petition. But I certainly support healthcare workers, and especially healthcare workers uniting and getting political about standing up against those kind of mandates. What exactly, Alan? That petition, is that petition going to be running for some time, or?
I'm not sure off the top of my head, but Rich, first of all, I'm really glad you brought that up. It's right at the top of the news page on the Pandemic Response Project, and that's all three words spelled out fully: PandemicResponseProject.com. PandemicResponseProject.com, and there's a news page you can link to from the very top of any page on the website, but of course the homepage there, it's on the upper right. And, you know, Rich, I tend to skip over that and look at the other news items, so I'm really glad you brought that up. And let me just give a quick summary of what's going on in the healthcare world. Increasingly, hospitals all over the country are requiring all of their employees, whether you have anything to do with patients or not. I mean, I've had people contact me, a guy who was a computer programmer in a building 2 miles down the street from the hospital, had to get a flu shot or lose his job, or the cook or whoever. It's not just the nurses and doctors working with patients. And this traces back to, it's connected to Obamacare, I believe, but Medicaid and Medicare has been set up in a way now for the hospitals to get their reimbursements from Medicaid and Medicare for the services they provide to qualifying patients. They can lose now up to 2% of those reimbursements if they don't have 90% of their workers vaccinated with the flu vaccine. And there's really two things, 200 or 2,000, but two main things going on here that I want to call to everyone's attention, Rich, and that is the flu vaccine is a door opener. This is not, well, we'll give everybody the flu vaccine and then we're done. There was the last figure I saw, it's probably been a few months ago at this point, that there were over 270 new vaccines already waiting for approval from the FDA or in clinical trials, last steps and stages before going to the FDA for licensure, for approval, because vaccines have to be licensed by the FDA before they can be administered anywhere in the U.S. So over 270 new vaccines and many other ones in earlier stages of development for sure. And so the flu vaccine is just a door opener. And the healthcare workers are also a door opener. They are a door opener to the rest of the U.S. adult population. There are currently very few adults in the U.S. who are required to get vaccines on any routine or regular basis. I mean, people immigrating into the U.S. have to get vaccines, the legal ones anyway, the 12 million or whatever it is, the illegal ones don't. At least they're not part of any procedure that requires it in terms of their immigrant status. But there are a few states that have passed laws recently requiring healthcare workers to get vaccines. But mostly what's going on is just the hospitals or hospital systems or healthcare, the companies, is implementing this company policy, but in large part because they're at risk of losing money if they don't, Medicaid and Medicare reimbursement. So it's all about the money. There are multiple mainstream sources that have said that flu vaccines don't work. They can, however, injure and kill you. I've had clients, healthcare worker clients who have had patients who have been permanently disabled or killed by flu vaccines. So this is not a hypothetical situation. In fact, if you go to the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program website, the Federal Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, they post statistics, and flu vaccines in recent months anyway have been the highest payouts for injury and death caused by vaccines of all the different vaccines. That website provides statistics that shows the breakdown of what vaccines and what are the payouts for each vaccine for each year. And it's over $2.8 billion now, nearly $3 billion, and that's roughly $100 million a year paid out by the federal government, despite the fact that, according to the FDA and CDC anyway, that 90 to 99% of the serious adverse events never even get reported. So the truth is we have no clue what the real scope of vaccine injury and death is. But just based on what we do know, $100 million a year. And flu vaccines, at least in recent history, are the single largest payouts for all the different vaccines that are covered by this program. So it's really, really disturbing. But there was research from the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota, and they said they had research showing if you had a flu vaccine 2 years in a row, it actually lowers protection. There's recent research looking at preteens and teens that if you have a flu vaccine, you have between 3 and 4 times the risk and rate of upper respiratory infection, which most of us call the flu in layman's terms, whether or not it's technically one of the few influenza strains, because as the Cochrane Collaboration has said, there are over 200 different viruses that can cause flu-like symptoms. So we have influenza vaccines that we sometimes refer to loosely as flu vaccines, but the word flu in common language includes many, many more different kinds of illnesses than the ones that influenza vaccines are supposedly designed to address. So does the influenza vaccine cause the flu? Well, maybe it doesn't cause influenza, but clearly it causes flu-like illnesses. Anyway, 3 to 4 times the rate of upper respiratory illnesses in children who got an influenza vaccine compared to those who did not. So the idea of this bizarre, aggressive pushing of flu vaccines, it's got no scientific basis. In fact, the science argues against using flu vaccines at all. And there's research showing that if you have vitamin D supplementation, that works better than flu vaccines in preventing the flu. Anyway, so why would you risk injury or death from a vaccine? You can just take vitamin D supplements. Probably cost a lot less, but it's protective, and maybe over the long term cost more, but it's protective against the flu and against chronic diseases, cancer and other chronic diseases as well. So much, much better to take the nutritional approach, raise your body's ability to resist or fight these illnesses than to risk injury or death on the hope that maybe the vaccine will work, where with the flu vaccine, there's research that says it's counterproductive. So this is a really messy area, Rich, and they want to do the healthcare workers because then they're going to hold that up to the rest of the country. Look, all your healthcare professionals have the flu shot. Shouldn't you get the flu shot too? And they won't bother to mention that the reason the healthcare professionals got the flu shot is because they'd lose their jobs if they didn't. And then they want to use that flu vaccine to open the door for an endless list of other vaccines. When they start getting vaccines either heavily recommended or mandated for adults, they will double or triple or quadruple the income from the childhood or children's vaccine market. And the international vaccine industry is projected to grow at an annual rate of about 10 to 12% over the next several years. So there is huge money involved. Well, I've kind of talked myself into a corner here. Rich, let me pass the mic back over to you, and we'll have to, believe it or not, we're actually going to go to break in about 3 minutes here. But, Rich, you have any follow-up comments, or do you want to move on to another topic here?
Well, let's hit another topic, and, you know, maybe we can get it in, or we might revisit after the break. But I noticed this article from CBS News entitled "Pro-Vaccination Efforts Debunking Autism Myths May Be Scaring Wary Parents from Shots." And that caught my attention because, you know, it's such a you know, large news outlet. And this article really blew my mind, Alan. It was so vague. I mean, reading this article as a mainstream publication, and of course it is, it's pro-vaccine, but it's worth looking at since it's CBS and just kind of how this kind of article works. I mean, the whole the whole point of, you know, the article and the point that they come to is that, you know, there is no autism connection, but when pointing that out kind of and debunking, you know, the myths about it, it might not have the effect that they need. So they need to be real careful and do a lot of marketing research on how they kind of, you know, make their vaccine announcements. And there's no talk about, you know, any real studies of safety or effectiveness or anything in this discussion. It's all just about, oh, well, we have to, you know, even the last line of this thing is we need to carefully test vaccination messaging before making it public. So anyway, I mentioned that, Alan, and I just thought that was kind of eye-opening just to read that report and get the feeling from that article.
I think it's so very telling, Rich, and you sort of hit on this at least sort of indirectly when you use the word marketing here, that they're focusing on how do we market vaccines. Now, if the research and what goes on in the real world is positive, you don't have to market anything. You don't have to, you know, when you say we got to figure out how to market this, that you might as well come right out and be honest and say we've got to figure out how to skew reality here so we can pull the wool over people's eyes. Because if there's research supporting what you're doing and if there are real-world experiences supporting what you're doing, when you say vaccines don't cause autism, anybody who's done any research objectively on the subject is going to find a wealth of information pointing exactly the opposite direction. You know, gosh, I mean, I'm half tempted. Maybe I'll come back on the other side of the break and read through a list of things, but there are multiple studies that point to a connection. There's at least one study where a formal pharmaceutical researcher did a survey of the autism literature and concluded that vaccines are a cause of autism. So it's right there in the medical literature. And then you've got the underlying corruption issues where Freedom of Information Act requests have pulled up information showing that the CDC knows that vaccines cause autism. They deliberately withheld from publication information about that. So when the mainstream media keeps going on with this nonsense about how we can't seem to break this myth about vaccines and autism, that's because it's not a myth. But anyway, let's go ahead and catch the break here. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips and special guest this evening, Rich Roberts from the Pandemic Response Project. We are going to go to break. We'll be right back. But let me first give you the call-in number. If you'd like to call in, you can call in to listen, but if you'd like to call in to ask a question or offer a comment about vaccines or vaccine rights, you're certainly welcome to do that. That number is area code 347-324-3704. That number again, area code 347-324-3704. And we are, this is a simulcast. We're broadcasting on Freedomizer Radio and also Homeopathy World Community Radio. And we welcome listeners from both audiences. It's great to have you with us this evening. So, vaccines and your rights. We will be back in just a few very short minutes. Please stay with us. Lots more to talk about.
Vaccines are required for students, employees, immigrants, military members, and international travel. Do you know how to legally avoid them? This is vaccine rights attorney and Freedomizer radio host Alan Phillips. My vaccine exemption ebook can help you avoid the mistakes that have cost others their exemption rights. Get the authoritative guide to vaccine legal exemptions, an ebook available at freedomizerradio.com and vaccinerights.com.
Let freedom ring throughout the land.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing.
Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait.
There's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to libertystickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. Libertystickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high-fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping. So go to freedomizerradio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on freedomizerradio.com.
I'm not a lab rat.
I'm not a lab rat.
My family is not a bunch of lab rats.
I am not a lab rat.
Thanks, but no thanks.
80% of the processed food in America has been genetically modified.
That's GMOs. That's GMOs.
You can't even tell what foods contain GMOs at the grocery store.
Because no GMO food labels are required.
That makes us the guinea pigs.
Sounds like an experiment to me.
GMOs are scary.
It's up to you.
You're an adult. You can vote.
I can't vote because I'm a kid.
Vote yes. Vote yes. Please vote yes. Count the cookie.
Freedomizer, you have a voice.
How will you vote when initiatives are added to the ballot in your state?
Well, we are back with Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. This is Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips talking to you live from the Vaccine Rights Studios in Asheville, North Carolina. And joining me this evening on the phone is Rich Roberts with the Pandemic Response Project. Rich, I saw something, I have heard of this before, but I saw it come up again, and I just have to mention it here. Bill Gates has, through the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, I guess is where it comes from, but provided money to develop vaccines to be delivered by mosquitoes. And I ran this past my 12-year-old son, just to show you how obvious some of this is. He had a very insightful response, and he says, that's ridiculous whether the vaccine works or not, because mosquitoes can carry other diseases. So you release a bunch of mosquitoes with, say, it has some wonderful vaccine that works perfectly well and has no side effects. You know, say it's a miracle vaccine, because there is no such thing that I know of ever so far. Say you had the miracle vaccine, but, you know, say that mosquito bites somebody with malaria before they come and vaccinate you and bite you. And I thought that was a really insightful response on his part, because I was going more into sort of the in a different direction. My immediate concern was, well, wait a second, you're talking about vaccinating people, whether they want to be vaccinated or not, you know, and that, of course, is the huge issue. You know, my public position is not that people shouldn't vaccinate. It's not about whether or not they should vaccinate. It's that everybody should have a right to make an informed choice and should have access to complete information and not be pressured one way or the other. And if we had that kind of a situation, I think absolutely we'd have a lot fewer people vaccinating, but you'd have some people vaccinating, you'd have some people doing some vaccines, and you'd have people who were doing no vaccinating and were doing other things. And that's what should happen in a free – well, not necessarily that end result, but the ability to make the choice is what should happen in a truly free society. So freedom is a very relative word these days in our society. And becoming more and more relative, I'm afraid, as we see freedoms being eroded on many fronts, including in the vaccine arena. But, Rich, any comments there or any other topics you want to take us to?
Well, you know, the mosquito thing, I mean, come on, you know. It's just so creepy that it sort of shows how extreme, really, you know, the vaccine mandates and the hard sell of vaccines, you know, is becoming. And right, you know, not to mention the other kind of scientific questions about, is that even, you know, it doesn't sound like a good idea right off, because, you know, everybody associates mosquitoes with malaria and all sorts of kind of, you know, insect-borne disease. Not to mention, like you're saying, that, you know, they're going to force this vaccine on you, you know, through mosquitoes. So, you know, it's like I've watched Bill Gates, you know, when he speaks about this, and I really don't know what to make of him, but sometimes, I mean, it just seems kind of creepy how they try to make it come off so friendly and, you know, hard sell and positive, but it's just, you know, it's just out in left field, and it just gets more and more weird with, you know, things like mosquitoes, and we were talking a month or two ago about they were going to vaccinate deer, you know, with stuff they drop from airplanes, and, you know, that stuff to me just, right off, it just sounds like a bad idea. Anytime we start doing invasive and unnatural things like that, it's probably fairly easy to come up with, you know, several good reasons right off why that's a bad idea, and certainly not justified by just saying it's about, you know, vaccination. But anyway, that was kind of my thinking on that particular article, and that was interesting.
Well, let me jump in with a quick comment before I let you get on to another topic there, because as you're talking, it occurred to me that another aspect of the danger here reminded me of GMOs, where the GMO fields will almost unavoidably, and in the real world this is what has happened, they have intermixed with the non-GMO fields. And it's even been crazier than that. It's that then the people, the farmers with the non-GMO fields, get sued by the GMO people for having, you know, patented GMO stuff. It's just crazy, insanity. But the point is this: once you let something out into the natural environment, it's out of control. You cannot recall it. Once you have changed the natural order, the natural ecology, you cannot go out and fix that. And so when you talk about putting something in mosquitoes, you're not going to be able to control, and this would be particularly a particular concern to me if they were experimenting with a live virus, but I don't know if that's necessarily what they're doing, but that's what I would presume they would be doing. But we'll have to see how this plays out and get more information. But especially if you were talking about mosquitoes transmitting a live virus, you know, where is that virus going to end up? And, you know, how many times you're going to be bitten by one mosquito, and does that matter, for example? Or by different – how many times does one person get vaccinated? You know, is that a problem? But where else is that virus going to end up? And in what other animals, in what other creatures or environments that might be a place where, if it is a live virus, where it would be subject to mutations and who knows what? So – or how is it going to potentially have adverse effects on other parts of the ecology that were completely unforeseen and unintended, as has now been happening for years with GMO crops? So the prospect is disturbing. And I really wonder how much of this Bill Gates, does he really know what he's doing, or is he somehow blinded by the mainstream views and just sort of blindly going down that path? It's hard to imagine him not really knowing more than he's letting on to, but or could let on to, but who knows?
Well, you know, we speculate, but it is fascinating. You know, I think it's human nature to think about that, you know, a person like that having such a big influence in the kind of, you know, altar arena from, you know, where we are working, and how they operate. I highly suspect that, you know, he knows a lot more than he kind of is letting on. But, you know, I could almost see that he could just almost see himself as some sort of, you know, successful businessman kind of, you know, trying to do good for the world and make money at the same time. And just, but, you know, I don't know. I guess it gets to be quite a stretch. But, you know, what it comes down to is, you know, mandatory vaccinations, you know, I think that goes against our basic kind of human and healthcare rights. And in this particular instance with the mosquitoes, Alan, I think that this would go against even the rights of the mosquitoes. So that's even crazier. So you can say.
We'll have I have to start a campaign here for mosquito rights. It does seem cruel even to the mosquitoes, doesn't it? I'm not sure we'll get too far with that one, but it is crazy. Well, what else we got going on, Rich? The hour is flying by here. We got about 10 more minutes, 10, 12 minutes.
Well, I saw this article in the Activist Post, and I wanted to discuss it and see if you had heard any more about it. But apparently February 25th and 26th of this year, there was a international symposium about the HPV vaccination and the problems that it's caused, particularly in Japan. And, you know, I'm just reading, like, the details about this symposium, and, you know, it definitely seems very professional and well-attended, and the scientists behind this, you know, have great credentials. And, you know, I just wonder, Alan, you know, I know stuff like this, you know, it's grassroots, it's kind of exactly what needs to happen, and, you know, I know it can be very powerful. But then sometimes you wonder if it can also, you know, even though we get good information out there, you know, is it really effective at kind of, you know, promoting policy and winning the day, you know, or is it really like the crazy reports over at CBS that we were just reading, you know, that are really kind of driving policy? So, you know, I kind of my hat's off to these people doing this. And did you hear anything about that? That symposium, or
I have not heard any follow up on it, and I'll certainly keep my ears and eyes peeled and see if we do hear anything on it. There, it was promoted in the alternative vaccine arena as something hopeful because it looked like they were going to potentially be actually addressing the serious problems, as opposed to what we see here in the U.S. and way through Europe. This just ridiculous ongoing propaganda about how there's nothing wrong with it, it's fine, shut up and get your damn vaccine. And that is just so bizarre. And the HPV vaccine, now, I mentioned the flu vaccine has the highest numbers of payouts in recent months. But I think the HPV vaccine is the most harmful vaccine. And the only reason there'd be more payouts with the flu vaccine is because there are far more people getting flu shots than the HPV vaccine. But the number of deaths and these stories that are out there, not just one or two, but dozens and dozens of them, of young women, usually teenagers or early 20s, who in some cases are just on top of the world, and they get this vaccine and suddenly they develop these debilitating illnesses, disabling conditions that can last for months or years or be permanent. It's just awful. It's just horrible. And that anybody in government or in the healthcare community could ever do anything other than acknowledge that, see it as the tragedy that it is, do anything and everything they could to prevent it, even if it means that some pharmaceutical industry loses some income. Oh, my God, poor things. Instead of, you know, $50 billion this year, they might only make 45. You know, I mean, it's just so absurd. It would be better for 10,000 pharmaceutical employees to lose their jobs than it would be for anyone to die unnecessarily from a vaccine. And there's no evidence whatsoever that this vaccine prevents cancer. The only way you'll ever get any evidence is over a 20, 30, 40-year study, because most of the cervical cancer happens in middle-aged or older women. And you're just not going to be able to tell if it really has any real-world results over the period of time that the vaccine's been available. But it has some real-world results in terms of the harm from the vaccines, and that's documented. I doubt that all of it's documented, because as I keep repeating perhaps ad nauseum to regular listeners that the vast majority of vaccine serious adverse events go unreported, but it's a fact that bears repeating because it is critical that our legislators, for example, understand that vaccine laws or proposed laws, bills, are not about public health and getting more vaccines out there. It's about raising awareness with the legislators and with the general public about the true harm that vaccines cause and the fact that the scope of the harm and other aspects of this issue keep being denied and suppressed or prevented from happening in terms of research or counting the statistics and so forth. You know, people say vaccines don't cause autism. Well, tell that to the dozens of autistic children whose parents were awarded money in the vaccine injury compensation program. When the CDC was confronted with that fact, they said, oh, well, we don't count that. We don't look at anything that actually proves that vaccine or shows that vaccines cause autism because otherwise, implied in their response, otherwise we'd have to change our position that vaccines don't cause autism. So we're not going to look at that. And they're not going to look at the study that showed that if you, for every 1% increase in vaccination, there's another 628 cases of autism, or 2012 and 2013 studies that found a correlation between the aluminum adjuvants in vaccines and autism rates. Now, I could go on and on and on here, you know, or the fact that the CDC was caught red-handed lying about or withholding from publication, which is fraud in my opinion, probably criminal fraud, information that showed data that showed that when they took the mercury out of vaccines, the autism rates went down, and the study that got published claimed just the opposite, that vaccines don't cause autism. Actually, they prevent a little bit of autism, which is insane. And Paul Thorsen, Dr. Paul Thorsen, hired by the CDC to pull together studies to prove that vaccines don't cause autism, and he was an author on one of those studies, one of a group of physicians who were authors on one of those studies. And he was indicted on multiple counts of fraud and money laundering with the CDC and has been in hiding ever since. He was indicted in April of 2011. He's been in hiding ever since, probably overseas somewhere where we can't get him. And either that or nobody's trying to find him. That's probably more likely what's happened is he's been given a free pass by the powers that be. So, okay, let me reel myself in again here, Rich, because I want to give you a chance to get in anything else you want to get in. And we're down to, let me look here, four or five minutes there.
Well, you know, I can get very, you know, wound up about this issue too, Alan. And, you know, what's that old saying, you know, if you're, you know, you're not upset, you're not paying attention. And that is kind of the way it is in this arena. You know, it's a fine line, you know, between being kind of, you know, outraged for all the right reasons and getting so outraged that we can't even think straight about this stuff anymore. but, you know, one thing's for sure, you know, the way that, you know, talking about the statistics in that instance were kind of manipulated, that's, you know, obviously biased to remove the numbers that you've paid out on, you know, you know, which were obvious kind of, you know, adverse events. But, you know, one thing you hit on, you know, as you were talking there, Alan, and, you know, I was thinking it more and more, you know, and when we feel ourselves kind of getting frustrated with the length to which, you know, this stuff goes on, it might really be that, you know, we have to face up to the fact that, you know, there is a criminal element to this. It's not just the activism of kind of always fighting for exemptions or kind of making a scientific, you know, debate about it. It does seem like, you know, big pharma and people in government, you know, there is kind of criminal collusion going on here, and maybe only when we really kind of get to that level of addressing it can we really make progress against this beast. So I know that's kind of, I have to reel myself in a little bit now, but you know, you do wonder, where do you draw the line between where we're kind of fighting, you know, as social activists for rights and where we kind of have to call spade a spade and say, wow, this kind of pushes, you know, pushes it out to a level of criminality, you know. And
Well, you know, it's interesting, Rich. Yeah, I was a guest on another show, actually just yesterday evening at the same time, and the host is a medical doctor, a retired medical doctor who'd been practicing for 30 or 40 years, and it was really interesting to me because during the course of the show, he brought up the question of population reduction as an agenda in connection with the show that we were talking about vaccines on. And I was surprised because I don't usually hear medical doctors go to that far down the trail there. But and I responded to that by saying, you know, I used to laugh if I did anything at all, either ignored or laughed at any time I heard somebody talking about population reduction just in general, but in regard to vaccines. And I just, you know, would think, well, you know, there's crazy people everywhere, you know, and people in this arena too. But, Rich, I keep seeing information that steers me back in that direction. And after I had seen a certain amount of information, and some of it very clear and well-documented, it's just really hard for me not to see there's a fertility control at minimum and potentially an active population reduction agenda as well, and that vaccines is a part of that. Now, probably only a part, but definitely a part. And I find it very disturbing. And many different pieces of information. Maybe we can come back another show and go deeper into that topic. Although I tend to shy away from that just because I think that's one that's hard for a lot of people to wrap their mind around. I think it's hard for a lot of people to wrap their mind around the idea that there's anything wrong with vaccines at all, let alone that somebody might actually be using them proactively in some instances with some sort of fertility control or population reduction agenda. So there are a lot of different layers to this issue, to be sure, and difficult ones for a lot of people to wrap their minds around. It's just so much easier and more convenient to go with the mainstream view and not have to mess up your day and worry about is the world an evil place or not. But as this Dr. Stan that I was talking with yesterday says, there are evil people in the world. There is evil in the world. And once you accept that fact, once you recognize it and accept it, it becomes a little easier to look objectively to see, well, is there evil going on in this particular situation or that particular situation? So it goes on. Rich, we got probably about 30 seconds here. Anything else you want to throw in here, final comments?
I just say, you know, talking about the criminality of it, you know, there are a few basic levels, you know. There's just flat incompetence, which at a certain level becomes criminal, I suppose. And then there's just, you know, conflicts of interest and just kind of, you know, breaking the law for personal gain. But I do think, you know, there is a lot of evidence to suggest that we're dealing with something even worse than those two. That's just more like a diabolical kind of a cult agenda to, you know, manipulate this kind of public policy for, you know, who knows what ends. And I don't know. I guess, you know, it is very concerning to say the least. And part of the reason, you know, I like to stay active in this arena, Alan, and keep kind of hammering this out with you.
Well, Rich, it's been really wonderful having you here. I hope you'll keep coming back. Always enjoy having your input and appreciate your time on this. But we got to go for now. I'm going to run some exit music here. You've been listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips and special guest Rich Roberts with the Pandemic Response Project. We're here every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and that's 3 p.m. Pacific. And we will be back next week, same time, and hope you'll come back and join us again.
Whose time has come for us to claim our birthright, each and every one. Evil hands have intervened, controlling from the shadows, think they can't be seen. But we have eyes, see in the dark, to cast a light upon the madness we embark. Let freedom ring throughout the land.
said no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand of the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait, there's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
I am an autonomous government agent here to steal your livelihood.
Not so fast. I'm Sovereign Filing Solutions.
And I'm the Sovereign. We're teamed up.
To bring you...
the truth without censorship.
Are you tired of being fed multi-million dollar media lies?
Are you ready for the real story?
Sovereign Filing Solutions has teamed up with the...